Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and Mike Neese on Blog Talk Radio. Robert is the author of The Offsite, Leadership Challenge Fable, and the founder of LeaderInsideOut.com.
And welcome once again to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and co-host Mike Neese. This is Monday, March 16, 2015, and this is Robert Thompson coming to you live from the beautiful San Francisco Bay, as we do each and every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. And, of course, joining me from the shores of Lake Michigan, my good friend and co-host Mike Neese. Mike, how are you?
Wonderful, thank you. It's a beautiful day here in Michigan.
There you go. As long as it's a beautiful day in Michigan, we're all happy. We've got a great show once again today. Our good friend Jim Kuzis, co-author of The Leadership Challenge, he joins us to share insights into how TLC is doing around the world and around the corner in our neighborhoods. We look forward to the chat. Folks, if you have a question or a thought to share, please call in at 347-989-0965. That number again is 347-989-0965. And, of course, never miss a session by subscribing to Thought Grenades on iTunes. That way, Mike and I are right here on your mobile device. If you're looking for something practical, simple, and effective, this is your place. Jim, it's good to have you on. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Well, thank you, Robert and Michael. It's great to be on with you guys in this first quarter of 2015.
Unbelievable, huh? the time marches on.
It does.
Evidently, I'm breaking up here in a little bit, so I'm just hearing that from technical side of things, so I apologize for
that. The audio is breaking up. Physically breaking up?
Yeah.
The audio is breaking up. I'm not breaking up. Okay. Well, I apologize
that would
for
be
that.
It.
I'm not sure what I could do.
You know, good thing we're not on video if you're breaking
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Well, all right, guys. Calm down. So what is new in TLC around the world, Jim? Because I know that it's expanding.
We just feel very fortunate, and that's a collective we, the Leadership Challenge community of which you guys are a part, and our publishers, John Wiley and Sons, and my co-author of, we met in 1981, so that's 34 years ago. Barry Posner and I have just been, I feel very grateful for the reception that we've received around the world. And I think that makes an important point, that while the context of leadership can be changing and different, certainly since 34 years ago when we started working together, there's lots of world changes that have occurred, technological changes. I mean, we didn't have the technology to do what we're now doing when we first started. And certainly when you go to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, or Abu Dhabi, or Dubai, or to Beijing, or to Auckland, or to wherever we might be conducting Leadership Challenge, or, you know, the differences between the culture in San Francisco, where you and I are, mm-hmm. or by the shores of Lake Wobegon, where Mike is.
Absolutely.
We have different cultures, but the content of leadership is very similar around the world, and at least what people look for and admire. They may not get all the things that they would like and they expect of leaders anywhere in the world, but the content remains relatively stable. And that's one of the major lessons I learned. As you guys know, I'm an old Peace Corps volunteer, and I started out my working career outside the United States. And I had to live and work in a different culture and speak a different language. And that gave me a great appreciation for how human beings are very similar in their needs and desires.
Sure.
But and how they like to be led. But the context in which that occurs can be very different.
Jim, it's Mike. I think that's true. When I think of the three of us, I do the quick math, there's at least 75 years of doing this kind of work together. And it strikes me that context-wise, two themes that I've seen emerge in the time we've been together. One that you talked an awful lot about years ago was the idea of courage. It takes courage to be a leader, which it still does, but that thematically came up. And then the second thing I'd like you to comment on is this whole concept of love. I mean, I notice that that's being talked about much more in your work as well.
Yes. You know, and again, thinking globally about this, there isn't a culture I've been in where love isn't an emotion that people feel deeply.
Sure.
And, you know, family values, for example, and the love for family are crucial. And that's particularly important where I was recently in the Middle East. And what we've, in fact, I was just at Georgetown University giving a talk on encouraging the heart, and with a group of coaches, and we were talking openly about how, as Erwin Fetterman put it to us years ago, you know, I contend, however, that all other things being equal, people work harder and more effectively for people they like, and they will like them in direct proportion to how they make them feel.
Right.
And when we feel a sense of empathy for someone or respect for someone, when we feel deeply about whether someone is cares for us, we respond very differently to that person. As you know, when I close my speeches and my tagline when I sign my emails and letters is love them and lead them.
Sure.
Which we learned from Major General John Stanford, who said the secret to success in life is stay in love. And you know, share one other thing, if you guys don't mind. When I was in the Middle East, one of the things that you know we do in our research is we ask people to indicate what they look for and admire in a leader, someone whose direction they would willingly follow. And what we found out was that, and this was in Dubai, where we spoke to a large group. And Dubai's a more international city than, say, Riyadh is.
Right.
But it was still very rewarding to learn that the top four characteristics of an admired leader, honest, competent, forward-looking, and inspiring, are the same four that people look for there as they do here. And that suggests there are some global expectations of leaders. And I think that's the important point I'd like to make. We also found, for example, that when we were looking at the impact of leaders on their constituents, what extent was accounted for by the impact they had, say, on employee engagement and performance. What percentage is accounted for by who they are, their ethnicity, their country of origin, their gender, their position, the industry they work in, and we collect data on nine different demographic variables, tenure in the organization, education, gender, and compare that to the impact of leader behavior using the five practices as the leader behaviors that we measure, and then look at engagement. So what's the relationship between who you are, your demographics, and outcome measures, engagement and performance, and what's the relationship between your behavior as leader and that same outcome and performance? And I think you guys know that the amount of engagement that's accounted for, explained by demographics, varies from 0.2% to 4% around the world. And the amount of engagement accounted for by leader behavior varies from about 25% to as much as 40% around the world.
That makes sense, yep.
That's 400 times
right.
more impact from leader behavior than who people are. And I think that's an important global lesson for all of us to learn. It's what you do that's more important than who you are, what your background is, where you came from, what your religion is, what position you hold in an organization.
Sure. Well, it's consistent, Jim, yep. with what we've looked yeah. at, or what you guys have looked at in the past years, too. I mean, it seems like we keep trying to find that demographic difference, whether it's gender, whether it's age, country of origin, and we continue to find, if I'm not wrong, we continue to find that there really isn't much difference there at all.
Well, there's not, Mike, and I think that's the power of going when we take this around globally, and we focus on the content of leadership. We find that leader behavior is what's the most important
right.
factor, and that the more people engage in the five practices, the more they model, the more they inspire, the more they challenge, the more they enable, and the more they encourage, the higher the engagement and the performance globally.
Yep. Jim,
Robert
here.
You're going to ask a question.
Yeah. I want to keep going. You know, you brought up the Middle East, Abu Dhabi, and Riyadh and so on. So I want to talk a little bit about you're going in and doing speeches there.
Mm-hmm.
So two questions. One, is that to set up workshops? Are people being trained to do workshops there that are local? And if so, are they independent or is it, sponsored by somebody? And number two, what kind of perception do you, let me see if I can ask this correctly, I'm trying to look for when you see them glomp on to the material, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do they glomp onto it, that's a technical word, do they glomp onto it somewhat like we do, or do you see a difference in how they approach it? I mean, content is the same, that the characteristics are they choose the same, which is wonderful. How do they approach it? What do they think about this material? How are they going to use it?
We find, Robert, that they find it very liberating. Let me tell you a story. I was in United Arab Emirates, and one of the people that I had a chance to meet was the director of the Ministry of Tourism in one of the United Arab Emirates. And he had been a participant in a program conducted by one of our certified masters who lives in Dubai. And to answer one of your questions, most of the training is done by independents currently, although we are doing some in-company training, and that is increasing in the numbers of people who are internally being trained to do that. And he had participated as a participant in a program led by one of our certified masters. And he was so taken by the notion of shared vision that he created a vision wall inside the Ministry of Tourism in which there were photographs of every one of the employees, and beneath
Great.
Each employee's photograph was a statement from that person of what they hoped and dreamed and aspired to achieve in the Ministry of Tourism. In Ajman, which is one of the United Arab Emirates. And I was so impressed, I took a photograph of it to show in other presentations, because there's an example of how when you introduce a concept that resonates with people in their hearts, they take it and do fantastic and fascinating and unusual things to create a vision wall. inside an organization where everyone participates in sharing their vision of the future was just personally inspiring. And that's why I say it's liberating to people when they see the opportunity that inspiring a shared vision, just as one example, can provide people in the organization. I have numerous examples and stories like that to share as a result of those kinds of experiences.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Let's come back home here conversationally and talk about our neighborhoods. Mike and I have been on this sort of quest. Peter Block had challenged us in December to go a little deeper with the show and talk to some folks about leadership and the common good. And so we created that particular theme, leadership and the common good, and started talking to several people that are, they're real leaders doing real things, demonstrating the real leadership stuff that, we talk about in their neighborhoods, getting real results and so on. How is TLC doing in that particular aspect? I know, we sort of cover corporate world pretty well. But the neighborhood world, the small organizations, are people grabbing hold of the message and taking it forward?
Yes. Let me just give you a couple of examples. My good friend, co-author and colleague and partner in crime for all these years, Barry Poster, recently was working with the largest family mental health organization in California, in which we did 4 3-day TLCs.
Wow, 3 days. That's the old days.
Yeah.
That was beauty.
Yeah.
When we used to be able to do 3 days,
yeah.
Jim. That was beauty.
And,
go ahead.
And that was wonderful. So, given the opportunity, they don't have the budgets like corporate America to spend, and their resources are not the same, and so we have to donate our time or work for very little fee, and yet you see those kinds of examples. And, Barry came back from one of those and said, this is why we do these workshops, because when you get the opportunity to go get deeper into this material and you hear people at the end of the program deliver their vision speech, you just get really inspired by the power of this. Again, liberating the leader in everyone, giving them the opportunity to express what they want to achieve. That brings back a story out in Georgetown last week, where Georgetown University, which runs a coaching program, one of the stories I told was from Melissa Poe Hood. Melissa Poe, when we first wrote about her, was the founder of Kids Face, Kids for a Clean Environment, which she started when she was 9 years old and a fourth grader. And by the time she left, when she was 17 years old, I believe she was 17 or 18, going from no members to 2,000 chapters, 200,000 members. And 2 years ago, when we wrote again about her story, or 3 years ago now, they had 500,000 members for Kids Face, Kids for a Clean Environment. And it's those kinds of stories that we hear about the power of people taking the initiative to lead. And one of the things Melissa Poe said is, what you need, you already have. You have the wisdom to see a problem and the courage to act on it, and the heart to care. And, people don't, you and I, you, Mike and Robert and Jim, we don't put anything into people. We bring it, whatever is there is brought out of people. We don't give them a vision. We provide a context and some methodologies in which people can express, but that vision comes out of them. And that exists around the world. We, Barry and I, along with our colleague Michael Bunting, much as we did in Asia, we did with Michael in Australia, and we wrote a book called Extraordinary Leadership in Australia and New Zealand. And it's all cases from Australia and New Zealand. Much as making extraordinary things happen in Asia was all cases and stories from Asia. And these stories are like the stories of Melissa Poe Hood, or like the stories of Carolina Wang at IBM, or the stories of the Ministry of Tourism in Ajman, United Arab Emirates. And they're really about liberating the leader in everyone.
Yes. Jim, I had a question, too. I wanted to turn a little bit here. One of the major trends in the business news these days are the millennials and the idea of helicopter parenting. And I suspect, again, the demographic difference will be slight, but I'm curious to get your opinion on what should we be focusing on to help millennials as they enter leadership positions, and help them, quite frankly, to escape from some of that over-parenting that they're bringing into the work world.
Well, you know, one of the things I think we have learned about this issue of millennials is I think we may have overstated the case, if you will.
Okay.
Yes, millennials
grew up in a different
context, but as they mature and grow, they're facing some similar kind of questions for themselves. So let me just give you a specific example. When we work with college-age students, and because Barry and I started at university, we've had the opportunity to maintain contact. Barry still teaches at Santa Clara.
Right.
I go back periodically now, we have over the years had an opportunity to interact with them. So when you're in college, as an example, you find that being forward looking is not as important to you.
Correct.
But you ask those same people 10 years after they've been working how important forward looking is, and you find a significant increase in the percentage of people who think forward-looking is important to a leader. And so as people mature and get into organizations, some of their needs change. As they get married and they have family, some of their values begin to shift towards other priorities. And so millennials are such a large generation, much as boomers were.
Correct.
When we were growing up, part of that generation, that we paid a lot of attention to them. And yes, again, context matters. Context can matter greatly. So if you grow up where you have access to information at the tip of your fingers and you can get it instantly, you might want more regular feedback than those of us
who
don't have that accessibility. And yes, millennials do want more feedback. And the kind of feedback they need when they're developing is, if you're a rookie starting out, you need more encouragement. And so people have to perhaps provide more praise and catch them doing the stuff right. But when you've worked for a while longer and you're more of an experienced professional, you might need more critical feedback to improve.
Yes.
And so I think some of these differences between generations have been overblown. A colleague of ours at CCL wrote a book really dealing with that theme and found that, just as we found in our research, you know, across generations, honesty, as an example, is the top-rated value. So there are similarities as well as differences. But to get, you know, to our colleague Robert's specific question, we have a son who's in that generation, and so we deal with it daily.
Yes.
And one of the things that he needs is at that generation is good leadership at work. So he works in television, not exactly the model industry for great leadership. And he worked at one time for one studio where the leadership was not great. Let me put it that way. We would not write about it as an example in one of our books of how leaders.
Are you saying, Jim, that they needed a work? They needed a workshop. Is that what you're saying?
They definitely did. The studio remained unnamed, and then he moved over to a larger studio with more experienced people, and you know, a lot of what was missing in the other environment he found in that environment, and those are the same kinds of things that we write about everywhere. You know, he's somebody who modeled the behavior that he was expecting of others, that set a good example. Somebody who followed through on their commitments. Somebody who brought them into the big picture and talked about, you know, what they were trying to accomplish, and you know, provided opportunities for people to work collaboratively together, like at a ping pong table, and they were able to, you know, at lunch time and break time, able to, you know, have some fun together. I mean, those kinds of things that you can do in any environment, but they work as well for millennials as they do for old. Again, going back to the data we've gathered, age doesn't account for, it accounts for almost zero in terms of whether or not people make, can lead, that have, create engagement or not. What accounts for it is, regardless of the age you are, whether you exercise exemplary leadership. It's about your behavior.
Jim,
very good.
Yeah. So before we have to cut it off, we've only got a couple of minutes, but let's go back to the Middle East and the millennials.
Yes, sir.
Let's merge those two thoughts. The people that are listening to you in your various talks and or doing workshops, are they the younger ones or are they the older ones, or is it a typical mix like we would find in, you know, if we did a workshop at Cisco or something?
One of the things about the Middle East that's true is that the population of young people is significant, as a percentage of the population, is larger than here. So the individuals who are participating in the work that we're doing will tend to be younger. But we do work with more senior people, too, because if they don't model the behavior, then it's just as people do in the United States, they get cynical about the leadership and know, well, you know, these people train us to do these things, but they don't model this behavior, so there's not an environment. So we work across the board, but the larger percentage of participants is younger. And one of the things that we've found, speaking of youth, is that the average age at which people begin their leadership development in the U.S., but you guys guess, what do you think the average age people get their first leadership develop, formal leadership development course is?
Oh, I'm afraid to guess what I believe, but I'm going to say 30.
And I'm going to say 40.
You're closer to correct, Robert. It's 42.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. Now imagine. Would you go to a? Would you? So let's say you. That's a minimum of 10 years after people started supervising someone, and could be more. Would you go to a physician who got their first medical training 10 years after they started treating patients? We wouldn't go to any other professional who's learned their craft so late in life. So what's a great need in the Middle East as well as here is that people start at a younger age. today, over 90% of employers would like to see people begin leadership development no later than age 21. So one of the things that we can all do to help us in creating the kinds of workplaces that our kids, our next generation of employees, to create a kind of workplace that will make them exemplary performers and highly engaged workers, is to start developing leaders at a much younger age.
Yep, makes sense.
Yeah. Well, we have to leave it there. I think we've covered.
Really, we do.
We're
just getting rolling.
It's unfortunate. We have to leave it there. This is the ball starting. The switchboard says, nope, you're out of time. In fact, we've gone a little bit long for our live listeners. They were unceremoniously disconnected there for a bit. But, Jim, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. I know that your schedule is busy, and we appreciate that you would take a half hour to have this conversation and tell us about the Leadership Challenge and how it's impacting the world, because it really, it truly is. And I'm absolutely certain that when you and Barry started this some 100 years ago, you did not perhaps think that it could go this far, but it did, and you guys should be congratulated.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Robert, and thanks to the two of you for being part of that journey with us. Couldn't have done it without you.
It's fun. It's fun to be a part of that journey. So we look forward to chatting with you again. Perhaps you'll, I don't know, maybe you'll go save Vladimir Putin or something, you know, and get him on board to start doing Leadership Challenge workshops.
Dead or alive.
We could certainly use it. Wouldn't it be great if he's still around? Anyway, thanks again, Jim, for taking the time. Really
right.
Appreciate it. Robert. Best to everyone. All right.
It's thanks, always, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
See you soon.
Yeah. All right, Mike. Next week, we continue our leadership and the common good theme. And you know what? I'd like to ask our listeners to share a few guest ideas on this topic as well. What's going on in your neighborhood that is changing everything for those involved? Let's get them on the show. Just send a note to me and share your story. Folks, this is Robert Thompson from Mike Neese. Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades for Monday, March 16, 2015.
Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and Mike Neese. Catch us live every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio, or listen anytime you wish on iTunes.